Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. It turns out that the crib is being turned into a computer base. I wrote an article published overnight at albertmohler.com entitled, "Does a Computer Belong in the Crib?" It turns out that one of the most fascinating trends for Christmas 2008 is the fact that toddlers and preschoolers are the targets of marketing for high technology, digital generation. You know, you've heard that's what this generation is called. There's no denying that this is a generation, at least for the last 15 to 20 years, that is largely shaped by digital reality. But something has changed about childhood. When you're talking about giving laptop computers to preschool children, when you have toddlers that are asking for cell phones and parents evidently willing to give them to them. The New York Times wrote a major article about this, published just this week. We're going to be talking today about really what it means to redefine childhood in a technological age. My argument is this. If there is a child who is a toddler or preschooler who feels more at home in front of a screen than on a playground, we've got a big problem. Now, with Christmas 2008 right around the corner, with parents, grandparents, friends, and family making decisions about gifts, it is fascinating to know that the toy industry is beginning to redefine itself as the child leisure industry. In other words, we're treating children like little adults. I think there are big consequences to this. I think we as Christians really need to think about it. I'm not suggesting throwing away all the laptops, iPods, MP3 players, and all the rest. I am suggesting that we need to treat children as children. And this is a good time for Christians to have a discussion about this with Christmas so close on the horizon. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll get to that in a moment. First, a review of some issues in the news. Salon.com is reporting that more than a third of black Americans no longer believe that blacks are a single race. Now, what's really interesting about this is that America is becoming a very complex multicultural society. That's not news. But what is news is that it's more complex than may first appear. Now, it's interesting that when you see forms, and whether it's a census form or an insurance form or many other kinds of bureaucratic forms, you'll have different boxes, and you're supposed to check one of those when it comes to race. Well, increasingly, millions of Americans are unsure what box to check. And when you have African Americans who are beginning to define even blackness in terms of several different racial categories, then it becomes very, very interesting. Now, Gary Camaglia, writing here at Salon.com, suggests that this may be a way out of America's racial conflicts and controversies of recent years. In other words, if you're no longer just talking about very few, limited, and enduring racial categories, but instead you're talking about more fluid categories, you might have a way out of this because it's becoming less and less of an issue. Now, with this report come other issues as well. For instance, reports are coming out suggesting that for most Americans, economics or socioeconomic status is a bigger indication of the persons with whom they have conversation and involve themselves socially than any other factor. In other words, in many of America's metropolitan areas, race is far less a factor than it once was. The remaining factor dividing persons within the community is more socioeconomic than racial. It says here, by the way, that the NPR, that's National Public Radio Pew poll that is cited here, said that 37% of blacks agreed with the statement that blacks today are so diverse they can no longer be considered a single race. Among the youngest respondents aged 18 to 29, a staggering 44% agreed. Writing the article, he said, this is extraordinary. More than a third of the blacks who responded and almost half of the young blacks have rejected the cornerstone of American racial politics, and that is black racial solidarity. If the poll is accurate, the most emotionally charged and immutable racial truth, the one-drop rule, is no longer sacrosanct for a large number of black people. So this is really, really interesting. I think it'd be something fascinating for us to track. And here's one of the things I hope you'll be looking for. There's a tremendous generational shift on this. There is a tremendous shift as you go to younger Americans who consider race to be such a fluid, complex, set of categories that they really don't worry about it nearly so much as previous generations did. It'll be fascinating to see how this plays out. But when a liberal website like Salon.com begins to take notice of this, something's happening. And when you start having a discussion within different racial communities of whether they're one race or many, this also becomes a part of the conversation. Let's remember as Christians something that's very, very important here. And that is that racial and ethnic diversity is not a problem. In fact, it is a gift. When you read the book of Revelation, we are told that when God's saved people are together, his redeemed people are together, praising his name before the throne, there will be men and women from every tongue and tribe and people and nation. And that tells us that God delights in this diversity. And if you had, as a matter of intellectual responsibility, the challenge of numbering the races, my guess is you wouldn't be able to do it, because there is such diversity among humans. And the second thing we need to remember is that when we talk about race, it is vitally important that we identify all of us as members of the human race, as Christians of a fallen race. As Christians, we also remember a race for which Christ died. And so it's very, very important that we put all of this into context. Race has been a controversial, very touchy and sensitive topic so long as human beings have dealt with the issue. It remains so now. But we should take it as a matter of grace and opportunity. If the question is becoming so complex that people aren't sure what box to check, and that may be an opportunity to decide maybe this really doesn't matter all that much. There are more important issues to deal with. It'll be fascinating to see where that goes. In Turkey, atheist author Richard Dawkins is in trouble. Actually, it's his book that is in trouble. His book, you may know, the bestseller, an atheistic treatise entitled The God Delusion. It's at the center of a growing controversy over religious tolerance because the Turkish publishers of the book are threatened with legal action by prosecutors there in Turkey who accuse it of, quote, insulting believers, end quote. Erol Karasyan, the founder of the small publishing house that published the book, could face between 6 months and a year in jail for, quote, inciting hatred and enmity, end quote, if Istanbul prosecutors decide to press charges over the book, which has sold just 6,000 copies in Turkey since it was published this summer. I guess the biggest shock to me is that this book that sold by the millions in the U.S. is selling only 6,000 copies over this entire season in Turkey. But one we ought to keep in mind here is that Turkey has some laws on its books that are very different from what you would find in the United States. For instance, here, you have laws against insulting believers. You also have, in Turkey, one of the strangest crimes, I think, to most American ears, and that is insulting Turkishness. Orhan Pamuk, who recently won the Nobel Prize for Literature, was arrested in recent months for supposedly insulting Turkishness. Now, I raise this today because I want you to keep this in mind when you start hearing proposals for laws against something like hate speech, where you start to criminalize speech or you criminalize an attitude. Now, the First Amendment to the United States Constitution does obviously provide some protection here. But the reality is, when you listen to some of the conversation going on in the halls of Congress, when you hear some groups pushing for legislation they want, they are calling for hate speech laws. How long will it be before we'll have something like insulting Turkishness on these books? Now, I oppose atheism with every fiber of my being. On this program, we're going to seek to address ourselves to this new atheist challenge. But I will insist upon the right of Richard Dawkins to publish his book without fear of being arrested. That goes all the way back to the American founding. Theism has nothing to fear from atheism in the battle of ideas. And a law that would prevent the publication of Richard Dawkins' book could also prevent the publication of a Christian book, if it's just a law that is employed in a different direction by different hands. I think it's important that we realize this. And as we consider Turkey and other nations that have such laws, let's remember there are some, shocking as it may sound, who would push for similar laws here. I was very surprised by a report that came from the BBC today indicating that Muslims now make up the third largest religious group in Ireland. That's right. In Ireland, Islam now represents the third largest faith. The figures show a 70% increase, 70%. In the Muslim population between 2002 and 2006. Last year's Irish census revealed that in the previous decade, 420,000 of the population were born outside the country. Immigration and returning Irish immigrants meant the population rose to 4,172,000, the highest since 1861. Now, that's absolutely fascinating when you consider what's going on in Europe in general, now in the nation of Ireland, which to most people, in terms of their imagination, is almost solidly identified with Roman Catholicism. We find out that even as Protestantism is the second largest faith, Islam is now the third. Another reminder to us that another nation once associated with Christendom is now quite obviously a mission field once again. We'll be back to talk about cribs, computers, and the digitalization of childhood on the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. It turns out that an awful lot of very young children are asking for digital appliances and technologies for Christmas. The New York Times reports that toddlers and preschoolers are demanding a digital Christmas complete with laptops, cell phones, and all the rest. I'm quoting here from the story in the New York Times by reporters Matt Richel and Brad Stone. They said cell phones, laptops, digital cameras, and MP3 music players are among the hottest gift items this year for preschoolers. Toy makers and retailers are filling shelves with new tech devices for children ages 3 and up, and sometimes even down. They say they are catering to junior consumers who want to emulate their parents and are not satisfied with fake gadgets. It turns out this trend has also been noted carefully by retailers and marketers who are pushing toys like the, don't you love this name, EasyLink Internet Launchpad, that's from Fisher-Price, and similar products for very, very young children. Let me quote here from the story in the New York Times. Jen Silver, editor of Toy Wishes magazine and an industry analyst for 24 years, said there had been a, quote, huge jump in the last 12 months in toys that involve looking at a screen. The bigger toy companies don't even call it the toy business anymore, he said. They're in the family entertainment business and the leisure business. What they're saying is we're vying for kids' leisure time. Technology has been slowly permeating the toy business for a number of years, but the trend has been accelerating. On Wednesday, 6 of the 9 best-selling toys for 5 to 7-year-olds on Amazon.com were tech gadgets. For all of 2006, 3 of the top 9 toys for that age group were tech-related. Now, let's just think for a minute. Number one, alarm bells should go off when we see preschoolers and toddlers spoken of with reference to leisure time. And as a matter of fact, I looked at that and I thought, good grief, what are they talking about? Do these kids have jobs? You know, they're treating them as if they're young adults. They're just little miniature adults. And even as adults have work time and responsibility time and hopefully some kind of leisure time. And boy, the leisure business is where an awful lot of this entertainment and other things, these technologies are addressed. You wonder, how does that relate to toddlers and preschoolers? And then I want to tell you a very honest assessment that came to me as I was looking at that. If you have a toddler or preschooler that's dropped off at a daycare in the morning and picked up late in the evening and, you know, taken home for dinner and then maybe for a little time with mom and dad or mom or dad before bedtime, maybe that does make leisure time make sense. It's almost like, you know, daycare is the job. We don't have control over that. The child doesn't have much control over what he or she does in terms of free time and play until maybe just a brief hour or a couple of hours in the evening. Maybe we are not only turning children into little consumers, but we're also turning children, preschoolers, toddlers, into little careerists, as if mommy and daddy go to work, and now the child in his own or her own way also goes to work. Let's face it, there's something just wrong about this. And I think there are an awful lot of Christian parents who are going to be under this kind of pressure for the Christmas season. They're going to be pressured by their children. Children are going to say, I have to have a laptop. You know, I just have to have a cell phone. Or what the kid wants is this or that. Let me read to you a little more from this story from the New York Times. Eunice Kotaki of San Bruno, California, recently purchased a Fisher-Price Knows Your Name Dora cell phone. That's even hard to say. Fisher-Price Knows Your Name Dora cell phone for her twin-year-old daughters. That's two little girls. They're each a year old. But a few days later, she returned the playphones to a local Toys R Us after she found that the girls seemed to prefer their parents' actual phones. Quote, they know what a real cell phone is, and they don't want a fake one, end quote. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about one-year-olds. Unless these are absolutely supernaturally gifted one-year-olds, they're not talking. And not in the sense of saying, I prefer the real cell phone, thank you, Mommy. Don't bring me any more of these fake cell phones. We don't like them because we, as very sophisticated one-year-olds, are able to tell the authentic from the fake, and we need cell phones. After all, we are twins. We could call each other and talk to each other. What kind of nonsense is this? There are psychologists, doctors, parenting advisors, and others, educators, who are very, very worried about a generation spending so much time in front of a screen. I fit none of those categories, but rather as a theologian and as a Christian, I am concerned with so many children spending so much time in front of screens. Not only that, one particular parent that is cited in this article had a six-year-old girl named Sabrina who is saying that her number one choice for a Christmas gift is an adult laptop because it's cool, she explained. Her mother, Amina, said, maybe when she's eight. She said, however, she might have to yield when her daughter turns seven. Quote, these kids are different from the way we were, she added. Might have to yield. Has anyone ever told this mom she doesn't have to give in to the child's demands? Has anyone told her that it's her responsibility not only to get the child what the child does need, but to choose what things the child has beyond basic needs for food and shelter and protection and guidance and discipline and all the rest in terms of toys? David Elkin, several years ago, wrote a book entitled The Hurried Child, Growing Up Too Fast, Too Soon. And this is what we're really seeing. And as a matter of fact, even some of the marketers are catching on to this and are realizing that we are redefining childhood. On this program before, I've mentioned the acronym KGOY. As some marketers are explaining, in this case, Sean McGowan, a toy industry analyst with Needham & Company, this means KGOY, kids getting older, younger, a syndrome that is not only noticed by marketers, but is being capitalized upon by marketers who want to sell adult products, adult technologies, to children at younger and younger ages. Now, when you talk about the digital generation, it's easy to picture this with teenagers. If you go into a library, you're more likely to find a teenager at a computer screen than with a book. If you go to the mall, it's going to be hard to find a teenager without a cell phone. It seems almost surgically attached to the ear. That's a problem unto itself. But when you start working backwards and end up with toddlers demanding cell phones and laptops, with preschoolers and elementary school-aged children saying they just have to have these technologies, and with marketers coming along to provide them even internet access for preschoolers, then something very strange and, I think, very concerning has come about. To join the conversation, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I would especially like to hear from some parents who are dealing with this kind of issue. Maybe you are getting this kind of request from your own children. Maybe you're feeling the pressure from your children that they supposedly need and certainly and evidentially desire these high-technology items, these electronic devices. Are you concerned about how much time your own children are spending in front of the screen? Are you concerned that we are turning children into little adults, both in terms of the way they behave and how they spend their time, and in terms of the fact that we are turning them into little consumers who are yet another expanding market for people to sell things to, and in particular, expensive digital things that, at least I believe, many of us are absolutely certain these kids don't need. Now, time and time again, I talk about how these technologies can bring great good. And so this is not a rant against technology. I don't lament the development of the cell phone. I am actually thankful for it. It can save a lot of lives, but it can also come with an enormous social cost and a personal cost to people who spend more time on the phone than they do in a real conversation with persons face to face. I'm very thankful for the computer. I'm thankful for internet. I'm thankful that some of you right now are listening to this program over these digital devices and by these digital technologies. But it's something altogether different to think about whether we could even expect a young child to understand the stewardship of these technologies. What does it do to their brains? What does it do to their expectations? What does it do to childhood? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, this is the Albert Miller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. I don't know about you, but I am troubled by the idea that we will be marketing to toddlers and preschoolers these high-tech devices. And I guess the laptop and some of these more infant and toddler-oriented computer products shock me less than the cell phone. That one really does leave me to scratch my head and wonder what people are thinking. Let's go to Bob calling from Freeport, Florida, listening on the radio. Go ahead, Bob.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I disagree, and here's why. Time management. I think it's up to the parents to select the time, the interactive tools, the digital equipment that they want for their 6-month-old, 1-year, 3-year-old, however old they are, and select that time and use it properly to train and equip these children for the future. And so I disagree with the way you're characterizing it, and that's my opinion. My view is, and my interpretation of the Bible, of the Scripture, to train and equip, is in the marketplace. It's not in the church, I assure you. It's going to be in the marketplace. So I don't see a problem at all with taking a child that young and equipping them and using good, solid time management with interactive tools up to that parent's independent right of how they want to raise their child. I don't see a problem with it at all.
All right, Bob. Well, you've had your say. I honestly don't have a clue exactly what you meant by the marketplace, that part of it. But I'll tell you, I think we have a problem when children are being trained for the workplace in the crib or in the preschool. I mean, frankly, that just sounds very strange to me. Where is childhood? Where's the understanding of children having free play? Where's their imagination? Where are they being read stories? You know, honestly, I think a lot of this is just parents not parenting. And you're right. It's a parental right. I'm not suggesting there be a law against this. I'm not suggesting that someone be written a ticket for trying to leave the parking lot with a laptop for a toddler. I'm just saying it does sound really strange to me. Appreciate your call, though, Bob. And I think you'll probably be a catalyst for some other people thinking about this as well. Let's go to Stephanie calling from Jeffersonville, Indiana. Go ahead, Stephanie.
Hi, Dr. Mohler. I was just calling because I have an 18-month-old, and I had bought him a remote control, one of those universal remote controls, just without batteries. And within a week, he wouldn't play with it anymore because he knew it didn't work, and he kept going back to the real one.
Well, what does that tell you?
Well, it kind of worries me because just what you were talking about as far as all the kids wanting all the high-tech gadgets at such a young age, and I don't know if he's going to be like that or not. I have a friend who has an 8-, 9-, and 10-year-old children, and they've all asked for laptops for Christmas.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't doubt that kids need some, at least at an age-appropriate level, need some access to these things. I mean, for instance, I'm not saying keep your kid away from the computer at all costs. Don't let them have any familiarity with them, with it. Don't let them learn any of these technologies. I am suggesting that I can't think of any rational world in which an elementary school student needs his own laptop. You know, a family computer ought to work just fine. I mean, if there's some special education program or something like that, that'd be different. But just in the norm, children need access to computers and computer technology. But, boy, I want to tell you, that access comes with an enormous risk. If parents are not actively involved. When it comes to teenagers, I strongly suggest that teenagers should not have unrestricted, independent internet access. I mean, I just can't imagine that any more than I would let a kid or a teenager, you know, go skateboarding on an interstate highway. There's just too much going on there without supervision. And so, Stephanie, I think your call is validation of the fact that there are an awful lot of kids who are growing up in this technological world, and they do want what mommy and daddy have. And I think that's absolutely natural. I think children love and want to emulate their parents, and if dad's carrying a cell phone, Junior wants to carry a cell phone. And there's nothing wrong with that desire. I just think there's something wrong with giving into it with the sense that these kids really need these technologies at these stages. As they get older, you know, that situation could become far more interesting. And this is where parents do need to exercise judgment. I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all answer to this, but I'll tell you, when the New York Times is concerned about it, I mean, after all, they're a place where an awful lot of these advertisers are trying to sell this stuff. If you have the major media concerned about it because of what it says about children, if you have secular psychologists and educators saying, we're concerned about what this says about the fact that children are being robbed of imagination and are being turned into little consumers and little workers at young ages, I think we as Christians really ought to be concerned, because we ought to be driven by a theology of childhood that says that children actually are to be respected as children and not just treated as miniature adults. That was one of the problems of the Victorian era, we can look back now and see. We ought not to repeat that in our own day. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. We'll be back with your calls on the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back. You know, folks, on this program, one of the things we try to do is look at stories in the news and developments in the culture and try to figure out how Christians should think through this. Is there a particular angle that Christians should have as a concern? When it comes to technology and children, I think we can recognize that there are some limitations, because there is a morality to technology. That's something that most people in the world don't recognize. But Christian thinkers, thinking very seriously about Christian responsibility and understanding that all things come with a moral dimension, understand that technology also comes with morality. It's easy for us to understand that when you talk about the breaking of the atom. Sure, it led to all kinds of medical advances, but it also led to the atom bomb. And so there are responsibilities for the management of these technologies. The Internet has brought tremendous good. Cell phones have brought tremendous good. You know, one of my favorite stories of recent days is the woman who drove off the road, I believe it was in Seattle, and they eventually were able to find her because they tracked her cell phone signal. And, you know, that's good. You get in trouble, you can call for assistance with a cell phone. On the other hand, that's not what the cell phone's used for most of the time. For most people, the temptation is just talking too much on it. Let's go to Scott calling from Paris, Tennessee, listening on XM Satellite 170. Go ahead, Scott.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. How are you?
I'm great. Glad to hear from you.
Got a 13-year-old son, and we're looking at possibly getting him a cell phone. I just kind of like your input. What do you think about a child that age having access to that kind of technology?
You know, he might need it, and he might not. Why now? I'm just curious, because I'm the father of teenage children too, Scott, so I'm with you in this. Why at this point does it seem right for this boy to need or to have a cell phone?
One thing, he's getting very involved in sports, so he has a lot of practices after school, things of that nature. Events on the weekends with friends, you know, just times when we're not going to be with him as often, and it's, you know, where we're able to supervise.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think you've probably just pointed to a good reason for a 13-year-old boy to have a cell phone. It's for your convenience and for his safety. Those are two good reasons. Your convenience, you know, you want him to be able to call and say, practice is over. That can be a good thing. And, you know, even as we've been talking about helicopter parents, you know, calling college students all the time on their cell phones and getting calls from these students, some of the good that comes is that there can be a lot of very quick conversation. And I will be the first to admit to you, if my cell phone died and was taken away from me, I'd be in big trouble. You know, if you can't find your cell phone, that's one of those moments in the day when it's like in the old generation, you can't find your keys. You know, your life doesn't appear to be able to go on. But, you know, Scott, I want to warn about a 13-year-old boy with a cell phone, because you don't want a 13-year-old boy having an independent social life that's not accountable to you. You do not want him transferring his social life onto the phone. You've got to watch the minutes. You've got to have accountability in terms of who he calls, when he calls, how long he can call. And I would just encourage you, dad to dad here, to really watch the instant messaging, the text messages on the phone. You'll notice those pile up. Let me tell you something else to watch for. You know, where is the phone when he's in the house? Here is a big, big encouragement I'd give you. I suggest that when you have teenagers in the home, the computer they have access to with the Internet needs to be in the kitchen or the family room. In other words, while they're using it, they need to be with people, observable. Their use of the technology needs to be accountable in that way. I would say the same thing with the cell phone. When they come in the house with the cell phone needs to go in the charger in the kitchen, not in the bedroom. Because what you do not want is your 13-year-old, 15, 16, 17-year-old, isolating himself or herself away from the family with the cell phone. And let me tell you, you'll discover an awful lot of kids you wouldn't expect this from who, by the time you look at that bill, their cell phone calls, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, when the kid's in bed, you thought they were asleep. You know, if there's no accountability, these things can and will happen. And with any kid, given access to that kind of technology without accountability to parents. But I do think safety and parental convenience can be good reasons for these kids to have phones and to learn how to use the technology responsibly. But I want to make a big distinction between 3 and 13. Does that make sense, Scott?
Absolutely. And you brought up a couple of very good points I hadn't considered. I appreciate that.
Well, it's good to hear from you. And that's one of the reasons why I think, you know, Christian parents need to be in this together, talking to each other, because we're facing a lot of the same challenges and our kids are living in the same world. And, you know, we can learn from each other and hope we can protect our children in ways by learning from someone else's experience. To join the conversation, call us at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Now, this New York Times article is really interesting because when it looks at these technologies and children, it really looks at the industry as well. The toy industry is beginning to identify what it calls the youth electronics category. It suggests that this is now a bright spot on the horizon. It right now accounts for 5% of all toy sales, but looking to the future, the industry believes it will be a much larger percentage. Overall toy sales have been flat at around $22 billion a year for the last 5 years. Now, what's really interesting also when you look at Christmas 2008 is that I think it was the Tickle Me Elmo, as I recall, that was one of the must-have toys some years back. Well, Elmo is back, but he's not being tickled anymore. The new Elmo toy is digital, high technology. And it's the Fun Elmo laptop. So that tells you something just in a few years how this has happened. You know, now it's from a toy that a child held and presumably tickled, now to a toy that is an Elmo Fun laptop. All kinds of things out there being marketed to these kids. My First Computer, Clickstart, Leapfrog. All kinds of things. Also, Fisher-Price, the Easy Link Internet Launchpad, which supposedly allows preschoolers to surf the net to sites that are appropriate for preschoolers. Not sure how they limit that, but that seems to be the premise of the technology. The story talks about Ibrahim, a 2-year-old boy. His father works at Microsoft, and the little 2-year-old boy has been using Pixel Whimsy on his dad's computer. The dad, talking about the 2-year-old, said, "We have a toy laptop for him, but he knows it's a fake." You know, I was absolutely fascinated by the fact that Stephanie, calling earlier, said that her child at 18 months is able to distinguish between a real remote control and a fake one. In this story, children 1 year of age, two little twin girls, aged one, who could tell the difference between a real cell phone and a toy one, laptops and all the rest. Folks, we are living in a new world. This is a digitalized generation. There's no way around that. And no one's questioning that we live in a digital future. And an awful lot of what's going to be required of these children going forward is that they know these devices. My plea is just all in due time. There's plenty of time for kids to be adults. It's very strange we're trying to push them there so quickly. I understand why marketers are doing it. They want to make a profit. And if they can sell things to a 3-year-old, they will sell it. It's the parent's responsibility to say, you know, I just don't think my 3-year-old needs a laptop or a cell phone or a briefcase or a car or a 401k. All that stuff can come later. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program. It's interesting to note that technology is the issue of our discussion here in the United States with marketers trying to sell high technology to young children, toddlers, and preschoolers. In Great Britain today, the controversy is about the fact that the nation is facing a mandate from what is known as the Early Years Foundation Stage Framework, becoming law next year, that will require nurseries and kindergartens in England to assess children continually according to 13 different learning scales, including writing, problem solving, and numeracy. A group of concerned analysts here are launching a campaign called Open Eye to promote the message that babies and young children learn most naturally and effectively through free play, movement, and imitation rather than formal teaching. You start looking at this, and it is a new national curriculum for Great Britain for children under the age of 5 that is going to require them to start learning how to write, how to read, how to count, and do formal problem solving at very young ages. Now, this gets back to the fact that we in this country, as well as those in Great Britain, seem to be concerned that our children are getting further and further behind. At the same time, this is what's really weird about this, we're allowing our teenagers and 20-somethings to act like children. You know, it seems to me that there's something wrong here where we're trying to accelerate young children to keep them from being young children, and then we're allowing teenagers and young adults to act like children, not to go ahead and move into adulthood, not to get jobs and get married and go on and do these things. I think it's just another syndrome of confusion in this postmodern age, and it's another reminder to us that as Christians, we need to go back to first principles continually and ask, what's the family about? What's life for? What's our theology of childhood? What is a responsible way of parenting children to move from infancy through adolescence and to ready the child to be a responsible citizen? Where do we, as parents, realize that it's our responsibility to protect our children from some technologies before we appropriately introduce them to others? We'll continue this discussion with you. It's very easy to fall into two different polarities on this, and either to say, just give up, it's a digital age, let them have whatever they want at whatever age they want, and on the other hand, being something like a Luddite that says, out with the technology, I'm not going to let my kids know about this, have any access to this. Somewhere in between there is, I think, the Christian parent's responsibility to both protect the child from technology at the wrong stage, and then introduce them in an accountable way to using these technologies when the time is right. Speaking of time, tonight I'll be on the NBC Nightly News. I'm appearing with an interview with Tom Brokaw on the issues related to younger evangelicals, politics, and the emerging church. It was a fascinating conversation with the former NBC anchor who is producing and is leading this particular segment. It will be on tonight, NBC Nightly News. Check your local television schedules for timing. And we'll be back next week for Intelligent Christian Conversation. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.